Okay, good evening, everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to Kadampa Center. My name is Robbie Watkins, and I'll be leading this module of Discovering Buddhism, Mind and Its Potential, Mind and Its Nature. There are several different names for it. We'll go with Mind and Its Potential. And we'll be together for tonight and the next 5 weeks from 7 to 8:30 on Monday nights. And normally we will start on time. But I know some people are new here tonight, and the parking situation can be a little bit complicated. But you can always go back the office building back this way, all the way 360 degrees around it. There are parking spaces back there. So now that you're familiar with the layout, we'll be starting at 7 o'clock promptly and ending on time promptly at 8:30. So let me see, who is here at Kadampa Center for the very first time tonight? Okay. And who has been coming to Kadampa Center but has never done Discovering Buddhism before? Okay, good. And how many people are repeating Discovering Buddhism? Quite a few, okay. And how many people have done this particular module with me leading it before? Okay. Now, I was looking at my notes. It's been 2 years and 3 or 4 months since we did this the last time, because it's a 2 year series. So it's been a while since I've done this, but this is a good one. And so now I'm going to turn the floor over to our replacement for Aaron Sloan, who we will miss terribly. But we now have Linda Saw, who is going to be the course coordinator for Discovering Buddhism in this 2 year series of classes.
Thank you, Robbie. So yes, my name is Linda Saw. Thank you. Yay! I am really excited to be here and start this 2 year series with all of you. This is such an amazing time and such an amazing opportunity to start this Discovering Buddhism cycle. So I am the program assistant, so I'm here to help and answer questions and do whatever I can, so just let me know. There is a handout for those of you. I think most of you picked it up. I know we ran out of copies, but we have more now. So feel free to grab that. You don't need it for class, so you can wait till the end and pick it up on your way out if you want to. But I did want to go over what this handout says, okay? It can be a little confusing because this is a 14-module, 2-year program called Discovering Buddhism, and we're running it here at the Kadampa Center. And then the FPMT, which is the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, of which Kadampa Center is under, also has a Discovering Buddhism course. So you can work towards earning a certificate of completion through the FPMT, but that does require a bit more, okay? If you want to, so there's, you know, several ways you can do it. You can simply come and get whatever you want out of it and participate as much as you want. You can come and work towards a Kadampa Center completion certificate. And on the third level, you can work towards the FPMT certificate. So on this paper, it kind of describes the Kadampa Center completion certificate as well as the FPMT, which does, again, it requires more, and you do need to go online. So again, if you have questions about that as we go through class or, you know, through the course, just feel free to ask me, and I'll help you find that information and try to get those questions answered for you. But again, it's kind of outlined on here, and it does describe where to find that information. So just a few logistics. Restrooms are kind of behind us on this back wall. Feel free to come and go as you need to. The course is an hour and a half long each session. As Robbie mentioned, we will be meeting for 6 Mondays for Mind and Its Potential, and then we have a couple week break, and then we'll start the next module after that. And let's see, there are refreshments out there as well. Feel free to help yourself to those. It's by donation, so I think there's suggested donation on the little paper out there that you can just put it into a little box. And am I forgetting anything that I need to do before I turn it over to you? Oh yeah, my email is on here, and it's at the very bottom of the page. It says contact info, so you can email me with questions. It's program.db@kanampacenter.org. Or you can catch me, you know, before or after class. So just let me know. And I think that's it. I'm going to turn it over to Jill now. She has a couple things to say before we get started.
Song and dance for the next person. So I represent as like the Kadampa Center side, like the building, the facility. I'm the manager here. So if you have any questions of anything, I'm just popping in at the first. Usually you'll see me at the first module, the first class of every module, just to say hi and welcome new people. Mention a few things, like, for example, the doors are open Tuesday through Friday, which is kind of rare for this, for any community nowadays, that you can come in and meditate. So a lot of people like to do that. And you can always come in and shop in the bookstore. I'll be here until we have a new, maybe, volunteer to do bookstore help before and after the class, if you have materials you'd like or presents or things you want to get. So you can always call ahead, too, if you want to come in case I'm running an errand or at lunch. But feel free to come in and use the facility. You can use the library and use the resources and just enjoy the facility. So you might have heard, the people that have been here while I've heard this many times, but for new people it's kind of unusual that we offer everything. We make the Dharma completely available to you. It doesn't mean, you know, that it's that the building doesn't have costs, that we don't have expenses. It means we want to make it available to you. So to make that happen, we always make it known that donations are readily and easily accepted. We have many methods. There's a little sign on the back about text giving. I notice a lot of people from classes like to do that because it's easy. You just pick Dharma class and whatever. You can even sign up. Someone actually signed up to give monthly, which is the first time for DB. So that's cool. You can go on to our community. You can see on our website, cash, checks, any way that's comfortable for you. There's boxes around that you can do that. You can ask any of these people who've been here before. Another thing someone asked me to mention that's just fun is that Heather and I do a lot of the social stuff here, so we thought we would just throw out there that every Saturday night, this could get intense because there's so many people here tonight, but we're just going to go ahead and say it. Dinner's at 6. It's a new thing we're doing at Aladdin's in North Hills, and so we'll be hosting with my co-host right there this Saturday. So every single Saturday night, we'll be there, and if you just want to come and chat with us, it's not a Dharma class. It's just to have fun and get to know each other. The secret tagline, I say, we get together because we like each other, so we just like to hang out together. So welcome. If you're here for the first time, we just want you to feel really welcome, and hopefully this facility and this building and these people can all become part of your family and your comfort zone. And now, Mr. Watkins.
Okay, thank you, Jill.
Dr. Watkins.
Yeah, so we're going to start this module, and we plan on starting all the modules with a short video that was produced by the FPMT, our parent organization. So, Brian, take it away. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Richard. He's kind of good at that, and he may have a future in public speaking or acting or something like that. Okay, since we have a lot of new people here tonight, I'm going to do some very introductory material about Kadampa Center and Buddhism in general that many of you are probably more than familiar with, so you can tune out on this part if you're so inclined. On the other hand, if you understand everything that was in that video, you can skip the next 5 classes, because that was the whole class in 30 minutes there. Again, my name's Robbie Watkins, and I've been a member of Kadampa Center since 1993. I've been studying Tibetan Buddhism since 1980. And have developed some personal insights into it. I'm not a qualified teacher along the lines of Venerable Rabina, who you saw in the film, or Geshe Gelick, our resident teacher, but I am one of the people who leads these classes. I was part of a group that met in 1996, I think, at Institut Lama Tsongkhapa, which is an FPMT center in outside Pisa, Italy. It's beautiful. It's in a Renaissance castle, and you wake up in the morning and you throw your shutters open and you look across the olive trees down at the Mediterranean. So if you ever want to go to a nice Buddhist retreat center, Institut Lama Tsongkhapa is the place to go, is given by a very generous student to the FPMT. But we designed this course then, came up with the 14 modules, and it's been taught and refined around the world since then. So that's my qualification for sitting up here. So we're studying, these modules are to introduce you to the basics of Tibetan Buddhism as practiced in our tradition. Buddhism is, some people even wonder if it is a religion or not, okay? It's completely non-theistic. There is no God of any way, shape, or form in Buddhism. And I'm not a scholar of religions, but my understanding is there may be one or two other religions, Jainism and something else, that are non-theistic. But I've also been told that Buddhism is distinguished from those in that in Buddhism, and you heard Venerable Rabina touch on it, there's also no soul, where the other religions may posit no God, but they posit the concept of a soul. And in Buddhism, there is no concept of a soul. There is this nature of Buddha nature, which we'll talk about later in the class. But Buddhism is based on the teachings of the Buddha, who was a historical figure who lived approximately 2,500 years ago. He lived in northern India, in the Arab, northern India-Nepal border. We had a group of people who recently went on pilgrimage there. Sandy went, and who else went? Anybody else in here went? We had a group go, and it's a wonderful trip if you ever get the chance. But he lived 2,500 years ago. He was an ordinary human being, and most people are familiar with the life story of the Buddha. I'm not going to go into that. He was not a god. He was not someone who came down from heaven or anything like that. He was an ordinary human being who completely developed his mind. And as Venerable Rabina mentioned, he particularly developed two qualities in his mind: compassion and wisdom. So by doing so, he became a Buddha. He achieved the state of Buddhahood. Also referred to as enlightenment. By nothing more than working with his mind. He sat under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, looked at his mind, observed it, began to understand it, and developed these two qualities completely. Compassion, being the wish that others be free of suffering, that all beings be free of suffering. Wisdom, basically being seeing reality, seeing things as they truly exist. And by developing those two qualities, he eliminated all the negative qualities from his mind and became a Buddha, the state of Buddhahood, or the state of enlightenment, an ordinary human being who developed his mind. And that potential exists in each of us. Each of us is equally capable of becoming a Buddha, as are dogs, cats, animals, all other sentient beings, all other beings with mind. Okay, some of us are a little farther along the path than others, but that's a possibility for all of us. So I'm just going to give you some words that you may hear. Buddhahood, enlightenment. And then lots of times you'll hear the word nirvana, which is not the same thing as Buddhahood. A lot of times people think it is. It's nirvana is kind of a way station on the Enlightenment Express. It's where you get to the point of no more personal suffering. Okay, you haven't completely developed your mind, but you have purified that part of your mind that experiences suffering. Okay, that's the state of nirvana, but it's not the same thing as becoming a Buddha or becoming enlightened. Okay, so we're studying the historical teachings of the Buddha, who lived in northern India approximately 2,500 years ago, and I'm not a great historian of Buddhism. So this is a representation of the Buddha here, kind of in idealized form. This is a statue of the Buddha. And let's see, next would be, anybody know who this is? I don't, let's see, let me see if I can pull this. Okay, who's this? Lama Atisha. And what did he do? Anybody know what Lama Atisha did? He took Buddhism to Tibet. It had come there earlier. It had died out. Lama Atisha went from India to Tibet and brought the teachings of the Buddha to India. And anybody know when he lived? I'm thinking it's like 900 AD, but I'm not sure. Somewhere in that range. Okay? So this is Lama Atisha. I'm just explaining this because you're going to be looking at this for the next 2 years, so you might as well know who's here. But the teachings of Buddha expanded throughout all of Asia. They went to Japan, Zen Buddhism. They went to China. They went to Vietnam, Cambodia, Sri Lanka. A lot of the greatest Buddhist scholars lived in Indonesia, which is now a Muslim country, but was a very great center of Buddhist culture for a while. They existed in India, which is now mainly a Hindu and a Muslim country, so there is some Buddhism left in India. But we tend to forget that Buddhism was originally an Indian religion, and it spread out through all of Asia and took on some of the cultural trappings of each country that it went to. So Lama Atisha took it to Tibet and established there, and it, like most philosophical beliefs or religions, it got corrupted, and people were using it for power, and they were using it to oppress people, and they brought in a lot of, you know, kind of spiritual chicanery and stuff. So the next great figure that we have up here, this is Lama Tsongkhapa. He is kind of the Martin Luther of Tibetan Buddhism. He was a great reformer, and he lived 1400? Anybody know? Again, about 1400 AD. Okay, so he was the great reformer. And he took, in addition to getting some of the corruption out that had crept in, he took the teachings of the Buddha and organized them in a way that was more accessible, both for the monks who were studying it in the monasteries and for some of the lay people. So this is Lama Atisha. These are his two main disciples. This guy looks like he's had too much caffeine with the bug eyes, and this one, and I can never remember which one's which, but they were his two main disciples. And Lama Atisha also established what's known as the yellow hat tradition. They wore these yellow hats, which today is known as the Gelupa tradition. There are four main traditions in Tibetan Buddhism. You can think of them as denominations in the Church of Tibetan Buddhism. There's Gelupa, Nyingma, Shakya, and Kagyu. And Kadampa Center is in the Gelupa or yellow hat tradition. So we refer to Lama Tsongkhapa quite a lot around here. He's kind of the spiritual head that of the tradition that we're part of. The Dalai Lama is the spiritual head of the Gelupa tradition. He's always a member of the Gelupa tradition, but traditionally he was also the head of the secular government in Tibet before it was taken over by the Chinese. And as most people know, the Dalai Lama dies, and then somehow they recognize his reincarnation, maybe close to where he died, maybe off in the wilds of Tibet, and that's the next Dalai Lama. So the Dalai Lama is the head of the Gelupa tradition, traditionally head of the Tibetan government, and is generally recognized as a significant figure by all the Buddhist traditions, the Japanese, the Chinese, and so on, even though he doesn't have any official position in the other Buddhist traditions. It's not like he's the Pope of all the Buddhists. He's specifically the head of the Gelupa tradition. The other traditions look up to him, but they have their own heads. But then he also had the political power. So there's been Dalai Lama, Dalai Lama after Dalai Lama. And this is behind Lama Tisha's head. We have a statue of, a picture of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso, the current Dalai Lama, who lives in Dharamsala in northern India. The Indian government has very generously given the Tibetan government in exile resources there. So again, he's the head of the Gelupa tradition. So here at Kadampa Center, we look up to him. This picture here is Lama Yeshe. He was a monk. A lot of people think it's an old woman, but it's actually a guy. He was born in Tibet, escaped over the mountains at a young age, and he was quite an iconoclast. He had the nerve, the effrontery, to actually teach Buddhism to Westerners. He's one of the very first in the Tibetan tradition who taught Buddhism to Westerners. And he did this in Nepal at a monastery called, at a monastery outside Kathmandu. And he founded the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. I don't know if he picked that name because it's really a mouthful. But that's a worldwide organization of centers in Western countries who are practicing Tibetan Buddhism, and Kadampa Center is a part of that organization. There are approximately 170 FPMT centers now around the world. So he founded the organization that we're part of, and he is deceased. He died in California in the late 80s. And his main student is Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is still living, who's the head of the FPMT currently. And we have the great good fortune that he comes to Kadampa Center or to North Carolina every couple of years, and he leads a retreat up in the mountains near Asheville, where we have people come from all over the world to study with him, because every center wants Lama Zopa to come to their center all the time, and he can't do that. He generally does a few main visits a year, so we're incredibly fortunate to have that strong connection with him. And the next time he'll be here will be in next year, 2020.
Yeah.
He'll be leading a one-month retreat at Blue Ridge Retreat Center and near Montcure. So if you're interested in Tibetan Buddhism, put that on your calendar. We don't have the exact dates yet. And then we don't have pictures of him up here, but Geshe Gelug is our resident, one of our resident teachers. He studied in the monasteries, the Tibetan monasteries that relocated in southern India, Sarojay Monastery. And our other resident teacher is Geshe Sampo. So we're incredibly fortunate to have two fully qualified Tibetan masters as resident teachers here at Kadampa Center. I mean, most FPMT centers are praying to get one teacher, and somehow we had the good karma to have two teachers who are resident here. So they teach on Sunday mornings, Wednesday evenings, and other special days. And then this I'm not going to talk about, but this is a statue of Kalachakra, which is a meditational image. Anyway, by Tibetan standards, this altar, as we refer to it, is very plain and bare. I mean, they would say, where's all the good stuff, you know? For the Tibetans, it can't be gaudy enough or colorful enough or anything. But anyway, the point is, we don't worship these statues. The statues are not magical. Everything you see up here is to help you understand your mind. Now, right now, looking at it, you probably just see a cacophony of colors and shapes if you're new to Kadampa Center. But as you start to study Tibetan Buddhism, you'll understand what these mean and all these tankas, as they're called, that are hanging down around the walls. Those are all to help you develop your mind. Okay? Nothing more than that. Again, and these are, I'm not going to open one up, but these are text. Okay, these are the teachings of the Buddha. And they're in wood, this one's filled with hundreds of sheets. They're filled with woodblock prints. Okay, so these all here are teachings of the Buddha in Tibetan, which Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo can read. And sometimes they, or if we have a visiting Tibetan teacher, will take one down and use it in their teachings. There's no table of contents. There's no index. I don't know how they know which one's where, but they're organized according to some system. Okay, the original teachings of the Buddha referred to as the sutras. There are thousands of them. They're incredibly long. We almost never study the sutras, okay? We study commentaries on the sutras, commentaries on the commentaries. Trying to sit down with a sutra, unless even a very simple one like the Heart Sutra, which is only 3 pages, is there's, you know, years worth of study in one sutra. So most of us are not at that level. So that's just a little bit about the altar and the organization that we're part of. We're studying Buddhism in the Tibetan tradition. Like I say, each of the... Oh, other things? Sometimes you hear the words, let's see, Theravada. These are just words you may come across if you hang out in Tibetan and Buddhist circles. And sometimes Hinayana. And then Mahayana. Just so you're familiar with those words. Okay. Theravada Buddhism is the Buddhism of Southern Asia, Cambodia, Vietnam, those countries down there, where the goal, the aspiration is personal liberation, freedom from suffering. Okay. Mahayana Buddhism is typically the Buddhism of, Northern Asia. I mean, this is a division like Protestant and Catholic, both Christian, but divided. So this is both Buddhism, but two different divisions. This is the Buddhism of Tibet, China, and Japan. Zen Buddhism is a form of Mahayana Buddhism. And in these traditions, the goal is liberation of all beings. The goal is to free all beings from suffering. But the basic teachings in the two traditions are identical. It's just different ways of approaching it. So just some words, not the subject matter of this module, but words that you need to be familiar with. Okay. The most important part of this module, I think, all of the modules, occurs outside this room. Okay. You're going to get some basic information here, but it's really not going to be in terms of information. You could probably put all the worthwhile stuff on half a page. The important stuff is to do the readings, do the contemplation, which means thinking about what we've talked about, and then doing the meditation. Okay. How many people in here have never meditated? And don't be embarrassed to say that. Okay, we have some people who are new to it. So I'm going to give you a little introduction to meditation because that's going to be a part of this course, this module. There's a whole module on how to meditate that'll go into more detail. But in the Buddhist teachings, or in the Tibetan tradition, the word for meditation is gom. So this word, this room is referred to as a gompa, a room for meditation. And does anybody know what the Buddhist definition of there are a lot of traditions that have meditation, meditative techniques. There are certain Christian traditions, a lot of others. But when people talk about meditation, they typically think about Buddhism. What is the Buddhist definition of meditation? To become familiar with, okay? It means your mind is becoming familiar with something. So meditation is absolutely not going blank or getting rid of all your thoughts. And actually, in the Buddhist concept of the mind, that's an impossibility. You can't empty your mind of all thoughts. It can't be completely empty. But you can become familiar with different thoughts. And the Buddha said, if you want to be happy, and this is the Buddha as a human being talking to other human beings, not a God telling us what we have to do, if you want to be happy, what I've figured out sitting under the Bodhi tree is that your mind should become familiar with compassion and it should become familiar with wisdom. It should know those qualities and that'll make you happy. Now he says, if you want to sit and meditate and become familiar with rape and murder and stealing, you can do that, but it's not going to make you happy. It's going to make you very unhappy. But if you want to be happy, which is a completely valid, non-selfish aspiration that we all have, your mind needs to become familiar, know compassion and wisdom. So everything we do here at Kadampa Center, and you may come to pujas, which are prayer services or teachings that seem very esoteric, is about developing those qualities in our mind. The potential for them exists, and we can develop them. And that's what we do in meditation. Okay, so it's taking our mind and becoming very focused on a specific topic or a subject or an area. There's nothing mystical about it. We're just sitting and looking at our mind and working with it. So it said if we're going to have a meditation practice, which means doing meditation on a regular basis, the first thing is to find a nice location for it. So part of your homework for the week, which you'll be getting on a handout, is to find a place at home that you can meditate. And it needs to be, the ideal is someplace that's quiet, peaceful, neat. You need to have rules with your family members and your cats and your dogs that when you're sitting on your meditation cushion, they are to respect that and leave you alone. You don't have to set up an altar or anything, but in the How to Meditate course, they'll talk about that. So find a place this week, find a place that you can meditate. I mean, some people do it in a closet. Some people do it in the bathroom. But it needs to be a designated place that you can meditate. Get that this week. You can meditate either sitting in a chair or on a cushion on the floor. There's a posture that is recommended, but is not required, but it's said that this posture kind of opens up the energy channels in the body, and that's not at all the subject of this module, but there are certain energy channels that can be blocked that interfere with meditation. But it's also a posture that is just, once you're familiar with it, is comfortable and self-maintaining, so you don't obsess about your posture for the entire meditation session. So the most important thing about the posture is that our back is a little bit straighter than we normally sit. It's not rigid, but it said that we have a regal or king-like posture. So if you're on a cushion, your back is a little bit straight. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean back if that's the way you're inclined to, but sit forward a little bit. Your head is straight on your shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. your eyes can either be just very slightly opened so that just a little bit of light comes in without actually recognizing objects, or very lightly closed but not clenched. Your jaw is loosely closed, not clenched also. You put your tongue on the gum above the upper teeth. It said that keeps you from drooling, which is not cool when you're meditating. Your shoulders are down, not up around your ears, but down, and back a little bit, so your chest is a little bit open. Upper arms are away from the side of your body so that some air can pass through. And you can either put your hands on your knees, or you can sit more traditionally in the Tibetan tradition. We put the right hand on left with our thumbs touching slightly below the navel. And that's said to represent the union of wisdom and compassion, the two qualities of the enlightened mind. Or as Venerable Rabina referred to them, the two wings of the bird, compassion and wisdom. The bird can't fly without two wings. Or as Gareth Sparrow, a teacher who came here a number of years, said, to become a Buddha, you have to be nice and you have to be smart. You can't be just one or the other. You have to be nice and smart. So that's what enlightenment is, being nice and smart at the same time. And then everybody always gets hung up on their legs, what to do with them. If you're sitting in a chair, just put your feet flat on the floor. If your feet don't reach the floor comfortably, it's fine to put a cushion under your feet. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit towards the front third of the cushion so that your pelvis is tilted forward. And you can just cross your legs. Or you can do what's called a cobbler or tailor position, where you have one leg in front of the other, or one foot up on top of your leg, or you can even do a full lotus. But the point is not to torture yourself, but to find a position that's just very stable, so that once you establish it, you don't have to pay attention to it. So take a moment, establish your posture, and just check for any signs of tension, starting at the top of your head and working down, and address those now so they're not a problem during the meditation. And begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the abdomen expanding on the in-breath. Three deep breaths. It actually physiologically stimulates what's called the vagus nerve and slows our heart rate and our breathing down a little bit. So you don't want to do it for too long like that, but just three deep breaths like that. And now allow your breathing to return to its natural pattern. And as we saw in the video, take a moment and set your motivation. And the motivation we like to set is, may sound a little bit ridiculous, but we'll talk about this more in the coming weeks, that I am doing this motivation to develop my qualities of compassion and wisdom. And that seems really grandiose and far-fetched, but we'll explore that motivation more over the coming weeks. And having set our motivation, we begin the meditation, which is a simple concentration meditation. We're just placing our awareness on the movement of the breath in and out through the openings of our nostrils. We're not thinking about it. We're not describing it to ourselves. We're not visualizing it. Just direct awareness of the physical sensation of air moving in and out. And when we notice that our mind has wandered off to some other subject about something that happened today or something we need to do on the way home or a hitch we have somewhere on our body, we just drop that thought and come back to the breath over and over and over again so that our mind is becoming familiar with its ability to concentrate, to pay attention. And that's the meditation. And just as we began our meditation with a motivation, we end with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something positive for the past few minutes. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it rest on my mind stream and may it develop in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings, all beings with consciousness. I have a copy of the homework, Linda. Okay. There's no time for questions tonight, but I love questions. And so the next five classes, there'll be a lot of time for questions and discussions. There is homework. Okay. When we're working on a topic in Tibetan Buddhism, it said we should meditate, study, meditate, and contemplate. So I'm going to try and set the homework up along those lines. The first part of the homework is to do the reading. How do they access the readings, Linda?
It's online and it's described on the handout.
Okay. The readings are online. It's very short, 4 to 9 pages. I'm not requiring any extra books in addition to what's online. But especially if you're going to be doing the whole series of modules, you should buy a copy of Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, which is for sale in our bookstore. It covers the whole Buddhist path from the Tibetan point of view, and it's a book that we reference here over and over at Kadampa Center, and we'll talk about it in all the modules. It's not light reading, but it's an excellent reference book. It has all pure gold. So the first thing is to do the reading. Find and set up your meditation space at home, okay? Talk to your family members. Train your animals, okay? This is your quiet time. Then I want you to meditate for 6 days this coming week. You can choose the days, 10 minutes a day on the structure that I just gave you. Establish your posture, set a motivation, pay attention to the breath, then dedication. It's fine to put a clock in front of you and refer to it, or you can set an alarm clock or whatever. But 10 minutes, that's all it takes to start off with so that you get some experience of that. And then next week, we'll get into our discussion of the mind / consciousness. We use those two words interchangeably. What is the mind? Okay, and think about that and be very specific. Is the mind the brain? Is the mind the thoughts? Is the mind the emotions? Is the mind my soul? You know, there's no right or wrong answer. Buddhism is based on examining your personal experience. I'll give the party line ATB according to the Buddha, but your own experience is what counts and the conclusions that you come to. And next week we will start on time since everybody knows where to park now. And we'll finish up a couple minutes early. So thank you, everyone. Anything, Linda? Yeah, homework? Okay. And this is not to turn in, but if you're doing it for a Kadampa Center certificate, just keep it and check the things off as you do them, and then we'll get you a certificate at the end of the module.